The Tony Greg Show.
Welcome to the Tony Greg Show on Crick Info Talk.
News this week.
The West Indies will be disappointed with the way the second test match is going. At the time of recording, day two has been completed and absolutely nothing has gone the West Indian way. The first dose of bad news came for them when Chris Gayle announced that he had not recovered sufficiently to play. Apart from his batting talent and leadership qualities, the West Indies selectors were depending on Gayle to provide a little variation to their all-seam attack. To go into a test against Australia on a pitch which is relatively slow with no variation is asking for trouble, and they got plenty. Simon Cattich is hungry for runs because he's desperately keen to secure a permanent place in the Aussie team and is still viewed by some, by the way, as an alternative captain to Ponting. He played well for his century, and this was backed up by the current vice-captain Michael Clarke, who also made 100 despite no meaningful cricket for some time. Clarke knocked back an offer to play in the IPL to lend support to his attractive fiancée who has recently lost her father. Clarke is favourite to take over from Ponting, but there are those of us who think there is a case for delaying his promotion until he is settled in every sense of the word. This is a fine young cricketer, able to match it with the best when he has a bat in his hand, and is, in my view, the most dangerous outfielder in the game today. He has the perfect throwing action and can also bowl a bit. Clarke followed up his seventh Test 100 with two late wickets to give Australia a firm advantage. The West Indies were wobbling at 125 for three when stumps were drawn on day two. There has been a lot of speculation on how much Matthew Hayden's absence affects the Aussie lineup and indeed their confidence. It certainly seems as if Phil Jakes misses his presence, but good teams should be able to handle the absence of key players. Hayden, like Gayle, has brought injuries into this series from the IPL sojourn, and while Hayden will be missed, his absence is nothing like as impactful as that of Gayle. The West Indian desperately need their stars to help each other build confidence, and there is little doubt in my mind that if a few of the rest of the team displayed the fighting spirit of Srivnarine Chanderpaul, it wouldn't take long before we would see some consistency from the West Indians. Old Trafford was always going to produce a result, and England certainly completed a formidable victory over New Zealand. What a blow for the New Zealanders. It was the incredible change in direction of the match that will hurt the Kiwis most. They had by far the better of the game, but lost it all in just one session of really bad batting on the third afternoon. They were bowled out for 114, and that's what gave England their chance. England is now one up in the series, despite playing uninspired and thoroughly ordinary cricket for much of the Old Trafford Test. The fact is, New Zealand threw this one away, and they were desperate for another chance at Trent Bridge in the third and final Test match this week. The problem New Zealand have is this Test pitch. It will be decidedly less flirty than the Old Trafford one. This alone is more likely to allow England to stick to their recent modus operandi, which is to play for a draw initially, then jump on the accelerator if the opportunity for a kill happens to present itself. One certainly doesn't get the feeling that Michael Vaughan is going to tell his batsmen to lift their collective games and improve their run rate. Only a Kevin Peterson cameo will do that. The rest seems very conservative to me. My predicament is a tame draw unless New Zealand get off to a great start and put England under huge pressure. Without Shane Bond, that is unlikely. It is worth examining Daniel Vettori's contribution to this New Zealand team. He leads them very well. He is bowling beautifully and is a serious nuisance with the bat down the order. Without his contribution, New Zealand would struggle. It's not often that a left-arm orthodox spinner makes such a consistent contribution in all forms of the game. But Vettori is an exception because, like Derek Underwood, he possesses a very well-disguised straight delivery. This makes batsmen tentative, and as a result, two things that Vettori strives for, wickets and, to a lesser degree, maidens, are very often just around the corner. England, on the other hand, has in their ranks one of the most consistent swing bowlers in the game at the moment, in Sidebottom. He's not that fast, but his left-arm in-swingers to the right-handers are causing plenty of problems. Watch his initial overs at Trent Bridge closely. If it's swinging, he's likely to cause the Kiwis more problems. After 19 years of international cricket, is Sachin Tendulkar's body giving way to the stresses and strains of the modern game? And if so, is the retirement announcement so many Indians hate the thought of imminent? A groin injury has forced Tendulkar out of the Tri-Nations series in Bangladesh and also the Asia Cup. This same injury caused Tendulkar to miss the second and third tests against South Africa in the first half of the IPL. the writing is definitely on the wall, but I don't think he's going to give it away just yet. These days, there are many options available to top players. Let's take Shane Warne as an example. He decided to give away one-day internationals and continue with tests and county cricket. That didn't last long, and before we knew it, he'd retired from all international cricket. Then ICL offered him a contract, but he decided to go with the IPL, and he's now having a wonderful time in his so-called retirement. It's hard to imagine what will be going through Tendulkar's mind. On the one hand, he may want to continue with test cricket because that is the classic game and his great love, but the five-day format is demanding on the body and takes him away from home for long stints. One-day internationals are also tough, but he would not be away for long periods, and while he would be forgiven for playing with a little more flair, he won't be able to spend the day in the slip cordon. I doubt if he'd want to continue with one-day internationals. It's more of a young player's game. My bet is that subject to fitness, Tendulkar will continue to play in selected test series, and because of the incredible advances that the 2020 format is making in India, in particular, he will remain involved with Mumbai in the IPL. His other alternative is to do what Adam Gilchrist did and give it all away, except for 2020. Also, I suppose, a possibility.
What's eating Tony Greig?
As a result of the huge success of the IPL, it's hard to get away from the question everyone is asking. Where to from here? Rest assured, every cricket board in the whole world is trying to work out how to capitalize on this latest trend. In the past, tournaments involving players from different countries have more often than not been run by the ICC and the proceeds shared between those involved or used to foster the game in developing countries. Mind you, the ICC's reputation has dwindled somewhat, so there won't be much of a vote of confidence in their ability to solve this problem unless Mr. Bindra can pull a rabbit out of a hat. The existing domestic 2020 tournaments around the world have not been a problem because they were exactly that, domestic. Now the IPL has involved players from all around the world to prop up their domestic tournament, and the profits are going to the franchise holders and the BCCI. This will force the rest of the cricket-playing nations to try to do the same, and before long, there will be so many 2020 competitions that they will all squeeze the rest of the international cricket program. So unless India finds a way of sharing some of the spoils of the IPL with the other cricket-playing countries, there's going to be another scrap in world cricket which could divide administrators and players.
My favourite cricketer.
This week I'm going to dwell on the captains of the IPL finals teams, Aussie Shane Warne and India's MS Dhoni. It's appropriate that two such attacking and aggressive cricketers should be in charge of the IPL's first final in this highly successful tournament. Warne has been frustrated over the years by the reluctance of the Aussie authorities not to give him the honour of the captaincy. But he has from time to time been a naughty boy, some say very naughty, and this is the only reason he wasn't made captain years ago. Had he got the job, it may well be that he would have changed, and had he done so, he would still have been the Aussie captain today. Dhoni, on the other hand, was bundled into the one-day international and 2020 captaincy role in quick time, and he's making a great fist of it. On occasions, the responsibility of captaincy actually brings the best out of players, and this seems to be the case with both Dhoni and Warne. There's also no doubt that in these two fine cricketers, there is charisma to burn. Warne, we know, is one of the greatest bowlers of all time, and he has done it in all forms of the game, while Dhoni has already had a huge impact on Indian cricket as a keeper batsman with incredible flair. Both these great cricketers come from humble beginnings, and yet both demonstrate the self-assurance one associates with so-called officers and gentlemen's brigade. It seems to me that they are both so secure in the cricket environment that they are happy to dish out as well as cop plenty coming the other way. These are two of the world's finest cricketers and two who will be remembered for the magnificent entertainment they are producing.
One question only.
Right, this week's question is from Angus from Barrel in New South Wales. He's wondering why isn't David Hussey in the Australian Test squad? He says that he's the second best Pura Cup run scorer after Simon Cattage with a first-class batting average of 56, and yet the selectors chose Brad Hodge ahead of him. What do you make of this decision? Well, Angus, you should know by now that selectors don't always get things right, and even if they do, there will be those who disagree. Also, once selectors make a decision, they love to be proved right. This is the case with Brad Hodge. While he has not played many tests, last time I looked, he had a test batting average of 55, and that is only bettered by Ponting and Michael Hussey in the current crop of players. Not bad by any standards. Simon Cattage is in a similar situation, having been selected in the past. He has been given another go. Mind you, you've just got to be patient with David Hussey, because he is a good player, and I'm sure is about to get a chance. And when he does, I agree with you, he may well have the selectors blushing. Right, well, please don't forget to email your queries to tony@creekinfo.com. Don't forget to mention your name and the place where you're from. I will pick the best question and answer it in the show next week. Thanks for your company. This is Tony for Creek Info Talk, signing off.
The Tony Greig Show on Creek Info Talk.